Give me your Bibles, please, to Isaiah chapter 30. Isaiah chapter 30. God does expect a lot of us. And we are now, I know this sounds like a term right out of Mormonism, but they have just stolen a very biblical concept. We are Latter-day Saints. These are the latter days. And we are the real Latter-day Saints. And I didn't ask to be a Latter-day Saint. It is not a, it's not a particularly easy position. There have been other times through history when it's not been easy to be a Christian. There have been times when it was easier. I think the biggest obstacle that we have is ourself. So at any time in history, you've had to Christians have had to deal with themselves. So that's not to say that it's ever been easy to be a Christian, to act like a Christian, I should say. There's plenty of people that are saved that don't act like Christians, sadly. In fact, all of us who are saved from time to time do not act like Christians. That's our biggest obstacle. It's the biggest goal for any Christian is just to act like a Christian. You know, people talk about how, well, you know, if I were faced with death, we can't even be faced with irritation and deal with it like a Christian. I don't know about being faced with death, but we are in a time when more is expected of us. Just is. And we weren't reserved for this time because we're any better. But we can be sure of one thing, that God's grace is sufficient, no matter what. And it is no more difficult for us. Now, what we face is more difficult than perhaps 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, as far as the external issues that we have to deal with outside of ourselves. That's true. But nothing can be accomplished within myself. So it is not that more is expected of me because no matter what I do, if I give my very self, you know, Romans chapter 12, my very life to the gospel, it's not me. It's not my glory. I've only done that which is expected of me. And I've only been able to do it because God has given me the ability. God has given me the grace. And I truly can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. So, yes, it is a difficult time. And it is a time where it's never been right to be selfish as a Christian. It is a time where we simply cannot afford selfishness. There just isn't any time for it. There is just too much at stake. And I'm sure it's always been that way, but it is that way now as much as it ever has been, and more perhaps than at some other times in the past 2,000 years. But I want to encourage you and not discourage you by expressing the difficulties. No one, and I can say this as an absolute fact, no one has ever submitted to God's will and been disappointed. No one has ever submitted to God's will and suffered for it. Now, I'm not going to tell you the circumstances can't be difficult. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego did not want to go into the fire. I've heard people say things about that, and I've wondered to myself, yeah, how would you feel if you were about to be taught? Not well. I would not want to go. It's just, they didn't say they wanted to go. They just said, look, I can't control my circumstances. God, and you don't either, King, by the way. God controls the circumstances. All I know is God can keep me out of the fire, but if I go in the fire, God is there. And he was, wasn't he? And that's how this works. You'll never be disappointed by doing the right thing. I know it will seem difficult. I know it will seem as if there's no way I can be happy doing this. I understand all of that, but I want to encourage you, first and foremost, God will always give us the ability to do that which He expects of us to do. And we will never be disappointed with the results. Will always be that which gives us perfect joy and happiness. And if we don't enjoy perfect joy and happiness inside the Lord's will, it's our fault. Nobody likes to hear that. Nobody wants to hear that it's my fault I'm not happy. But if you're saved, now if you're not saved, I get it. You should be afraid. You should be very afraid. If you're not afraid, you just don't know. You have no idea of all the things there are for you to be afraid of. I'm not going to try to make you afraid. There's so much going on. I completely understand why people remove themselves to the hills of Arkansas and surround themselves with anti-personnel mines and barbed wire and set up waiting for the big ones, scared to death. They don't even know the half of how dangerous this world is. I understand despair and fear for the lost. For by the way, they have no hope outside of Christ. And unless Christ becomes their hope, they shall never have hope. But we who are saved have no reason to despair, ever. And if we do, if we suffer, now I'm not saying the circumstances won't be bad. I'm not saying there won't be a fire or a storm or a lion to deal with or whatever the circumstance might be. I'm not saying there won't be mean, ugly, bad, horrible people that want to do bad things. I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying that God is in control. And if we submit to God, we can, in the middle of whatever circumstance happens, whatever circumstance comes our way, be happy. And if we're not, well, we're either not willing to submit to God's will, or we're like Peter, walking on the water, everything's fine, and then all of a sudden we look at the storm, we look at the circumstances, and we get afraid, we forget to remember who's in charge. Because it's not, no one who's saved ever really doubts that God can, right? And you can't know God and think He can't care for you. And you cannot know God and really doubt that He will. Doubt that the Lord speaks about when it's in the life of a Christian is that doubt which comes when you take your eyes off of Christ and you look to the circumstances. It's not that I doubt God is going to take care of me, could take care of me, would take care of me. I'm just not thinking about God at all. I'm thinking about the circumstances, or I'm thinking about what I want. It's either self-will or forgetting to remember. Now that sounds strange, but it's not really forgetting God, because I always know we can, but I forget to think about it, I forget to remember, I take my eyes off of Christ, I look at the storm, and even the experience of walking on water. Can you imagine that? Walking on water and then doubting? What evidence do you need? You're walking on water! Well, he didn't say all of a sudden, gee, I'm walking on water. I don't think God can do this. Of course he knew God could do it. He wasn't walking on the water and said, I don't know if God really wants to protect me. I'm worried about this. See, that wasn't his problem. His problem was he took his eyes off of Christ and looked at the storm, and that's what was filled his head. And that is the definition of doubt. It's either self-will or forgetting to remember who's in charge, if you're a Christian. Because you can't stop believing. You didn't start believing yourself. And then we're miserable. But it's our fault. It is not your fault if some bad person does something bad to you. It is your fault as a Christian if you suffer for it, if you're miserable for it. Well, that's the truth. People don't like it. It's not my fault. No, it is not your fault that that person did that or that this took place. None of those things are your fault. Unless, of course, they are. And we understand that sometimes they actually are. But if they're not your fault, then it's not your fault. But that doesn't mean that it is not your fault if you're miserable about it. You can choose to take your eyes off of Christ and look at the circumstances and fear and be miserable and be unhappy. Or you can choose to say, I know what God wants and I know that God's right and I don't want it. We do that all the time. Because that's not my plan. And you'll be miserable. I've told this story before. I don't know if I've ever told it here. When I was about 5, my parents had a Bonneville. It was a convertible. I used to love the every Sunday, you know, when it was nice weather, they'd put the they didn't go to a real church, but they went to sort of I don't know, it was mostly just a place to go on Sundays. But I was all excited about it because every Sunday morning, we'd go to Sunday school, and if it was sunny, they'd put the top down, and I was having a good time in the back seat, and my dad would hand me a shiny quarter. And I was so proud of that quarter. I would take that quarter to Sunday school, and I'd put it in that box, and man, I was doing something. I was proud of that quarter when I was 5 years old, and one day my dad handed me a piece of paper. And I was mad. I don't want some stinking nasty piece of paper. I wanted a shiny quarter. And I began to express that I wanted a shiny quarter. Now this is in the early 1960s. So when I picked myself off of the floorboards of that 59 Bonneville, I had a different attitude. See, my problem was I did not want a dollar because I thought the quarter was better. Was I right? No. But I didn't know the quarter was only 1/4 of the value of that dollar. I didn't know the dollar was better. My dad had upgraded me to a dollar bill. But I didn't want that stinking dollar bill. I wanted the quarter. We don't always want what's best for us. We don't always want the better thing. But we're convinced that we want what we want, even though I know that God's will is better for me, even though I know that God is right and I'm wrong. It doesn't make any difference. There's just times I don't want it. I want what I want. If you're honest, there's times when you feel the same way. I don't want this. Well, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego didn't want to be thrown in the fire. But they knew this thing, if God allows that to happen, if that is, and you know, allow, we use that word because we don't know how else to express it. If that's the will of God, that we go in the fire, the fire is the best place for us. He said, well, easy for you to say, no, it's not. Because I don't want to go in the fire. But I can guarantee you, this is a fact. No one has ever submitted to the will of God. No child of God has ever submitted to the will of God and been disappointed. The only time we're ever disappointed is when we won't submit. Then we have issues. I'm not trying to be mean when I say this, but it's a fact. An unhappy Christian is their own fault. Circumstances are not your fault. Being unhappy because of circumstances, that is our fault. Because circumstances do not bring happiness. God brings happiness, and it comes, peace comes like a river. It comes directly to God, from God to us. And it is not dependent upon circumstances. And circumstances cannot harm the joy that God gives his children unless we refuse to be happy. Some people just don't want to be happy. Well, I want to be happy. No, you want to be happy your way, which means you don't want to be happy. That's the way we get. We all get that way. Isaiah 30 and verse 18, "And therefore will the Lord wait that he may be gracious unto you, and therefore will he be exalted, and that he may have mercy upon you, for the Lord is a God of judgment. Blessed are all they that wait for him." In other words, when you submit to the will of God, it's going to be good. It will be good. It'll be good while it's happening, if you're submitted to it, no matter what crummy thing circumstances bring. Circumstances do not have a will of their own. They don't have a power to take place of their own. Do ungodly men want to do ungodly things? Yes. Can God prevent it, control it? Yes. He never causes anyone to do anything wrong. But anything that comes into my life completely under the control of God. Not that he causes the sin, not that he causes the evil, but he absolutely prevents all except that which is in his plan, and the circumstances can't harm me, and there is nothing that men can do to me. There is nothing that can make me unhappy except my unwillingness to rely upon or yield to God. And I can do that to myself and do it all the time. And people don't like that. And I know a lot of people that just will not be happy. "Preacher, I don't like it. I don't want anything to do with it. Don't tell me it's my fault." And those people are never, ever, ever happy, because they're looking for happiness someplace else. And they're blaming something or somebody else for their unhappiness. I'm not telling them that to be mean. I just want us all to understand how to be happy. We don't have to be miserable. Circumstances in this country are terrible. And they could get worse. I hope they don't, but they could. But that doesn't ever have to harm me. Do I like it? No, of course not. Does it grieve me? Of course it does. Saddens me. And I need to take that to the Lord and seek his. What should I do? Well, follow Jesus. Because it's not like you're going to change anything. But do that which God... Somewhere in the Bible, I remember reading that if I will follow God and seek his kingdom and his will, he'll take care of everything else. But I first have to seek the kingdom of God. All these things, whatever all these good things could be, they'll be added unto me. It's not up to me to control my circumstances. It is up to me to submit to God. And you'll never submit to God, ever, ever, ever submit to God and be disappointed, for he will always bless. We can trust his promises because he will not change. That's a good thing. God's immutable. So his promises won't change. He cannot fail to do as he's promised. Turn to 2 Timothy chapter 2. He can, and he will. That's all I really need to know about God. I mean, it's pretty simple. But to serve him, all I really have to know is what he's promised, that he can do it, and that he will do it, and then find out what his commandments for me are. Because if I love him, I'll keep his commandments. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 13, "If we believe not, yet he abideth faithful. He cannot deny himself." It is not dependent upon your faith. faith, God will remain faithful. The only thing that depends upon you is whether you're miserable or not, whether you're unhappy or not. We can make ourselves unhappy, and we do it all the time. The only true power in the universe works for my perfect good. Romans 8 is just full of that. Not just 8:28, but you just keep reading and it talks, nothing can separate me from the love of God. Nothing can take from me the blessings of being His child, of being a joint heir with Christ. Nothing. No, all the circumstances that he lists in Romans 8:31 through 39. I won't take the time to read it, but read it sometime. I mean, you could fit in everything you don't like somewhere in those circumstances he lists. But the conclusion is these things cannot separate me from joy and happiness and the love of God. So then why am I unhappy? Well, because I either am not thinking about God, but I'm more concerned with the circumstances, or I don't want what God wants me to do. I say, oh, come on. Preacher, we're, no, Christians aren't like that. Physician, heal thyself. You know, the truth will set you free. Jesus said that, and I'm going to, now he wasn't talking about this truth specifically, although truth in general, mostly the truth of the gospel, but I want to tell you something that will help all of us, just a little bit of introspection, a little bit of honesty with ourselves. We are our only true enemy. Now, the devil is out to get us. Be sure of that. And he's dangerous. But he cannot harm you if you... You know the old Roman soldiers? Most of them were conscripts. Or this isn't being a conscript, right? If the Roman soldiers come to town and they say, join us and be a Roman soldier or die, I think I'm all of a sudden Roman patriotic. And so many of these soldiers, the typical Roman armor worked this way. They were well armored in the front. But they just had crummy little leather pads in the back, which made retreat a bad idea. You know, you're facing the enemy, you've got some protection. Well, God has our back, so it's not exactly the same. But the fact is, doing the will, seeking the will of God, that's where you'll never be disappointed. That's where you're safe. That's where you, and doesn't mean that all the horrible circumstances of the world will not come at you, because I guarantee you they will. And the devil will attack you. But those fiery darts from Satan, they can't harm you when you're trusting in the Lord, when you're doing what you're supposed to do. They can harm you when you turn your back on God and God's will and you're doing whatever you want to do. You can never, ever, ever be harmed by anything but your own self-will and unwillingness to look to God. If you're doing God's will, doesn't mean bad things won't happen. Doesn't mean the fire won't be, you know, your next destination. It just means that in the fire, or wherever else you are, you will be safe in fellowship with Christ. And you can have joy no matter what's happening. We just don't want to, I don't want to be happy doing that. I want to be happy doing something else. And that's where my problem comes. Doubt is not disbelief in the eyes of a Christian. It's forgetting to look to Christ as Peter walking on the water, or it is self-will. Now, my question to you is, do you have the promise? See, it's not a matter of doubting God's promises. Not really thinking like God won't keep his promise, not if you're saved. Christians don't really struggle with, I don't think God can, or I don't think God will. It's, I don't want God's way. Or, like Peter, they're so absorbed with everything around them in the world, and they think of, they look at the storm, they don't even think about God. But the lost, now the lost do not have God's promises. And they need to be afraid. I'm amazed every moment that a lost person isn't scared to death and miserable. In fact, I think they are. They're just trying to convince themselves they're not. I mean, why else would they do the stupid things they do to try to make themselves happy? Like, I don't know, I used to pick up soldiers on Monday morning face down in their own vomit in a urinal. And I'd ask them, did you have a good time? I mean, that just seemed to me kind of stupid. They'd look up at me and go, yeah, Sarge. Just so desperate to convince themselves. I think of a drug addict. They know. The more drugs they take, the more they know that more drugs won't make them happy. And yet, they are desperate that the next, that's what will get them and make them happy. And that's what will fix everything. That's mental addiction. Sure, there's such thing as physical addiction. They know it won't make them happy. Or they're desperate to find it. Think of lost men or women that you know that have intentionally chose the absolute worst human being alive as their romantic partner. And not just once, but continue. You know what, what Einstein said the definition of insanity is? It's continuing to do the same thing over and over, repeating a behavior, he said, and expecting different results. Of course they're miserable every time, because they keep, you know, choosing the same kind of person every time. But they are desperate to convince themselves that this will make me happy. They don't care how unhappy they are. That's the way the world is operating. But it's not that way for a child of God. And I don't want you to think that God has removed the beauty in this world. I don't want you to think there's no such thing as morality in this world. Now, I understand that there is no one good. No man is good. Any right or wrong is an absence or presence of Christ. Right being the presence of Christ. I understand that. But moral right has not ceased to exist. I want to give you an example from my, I guess you could say my former life. I'm going to read to you a creed that I was given to live by. I'm not going to read the whole thing. It's kind of lengthy. It is the U.S. Army Infantryman's Creed. Do you know what's expected of a United States Army infantryman? It says, I am the infantry. I am my country's strength in war, her deterrence in peace. I am the heart of the fight wherever, whenever. I carry America's faith and honor against her enemies. I am the queen of battle. I am what my country expects me to be, the best trained soldier in the world. In the race for victory, I'm swift, determined, and courageous, armed with a fierce will to win. You might say to this point, well, that's good, and honor is a good thing, but it goes on. Never will I betray my country's trust. Always I fight on, through the foe, to the objective, to the triumph overall. If necessary, I will fight to my death. By my steadfast courage, I have won 200 years of freedom. I yield not to weakness, to hunger, to cowardice, to fatigue, to superior odds, for I am, and this is what I want you to pay particular attention to. This is what an infantryman swears to be. This is the creed for United States Army infantrymen. There is honor expected. I'm not saying that anyone lives up to what's right, but there is honor yet in this world expected of human souls. For I, why are they this person? Why are they an infantryman? For I am mentally tough, physically strong, and morally straight. Morally straight. Are all infantrymen morally straight? No. I understand that, but it is expected of them to be morally straight. They are held to a higher standard. Do you know it's against the law in the infantry? I mean, you can actually go to jail or get money taken away from you or lose your stripes, etc. If you cheat on your wife, commander can have you come in and deal with you. It is, you see, I'm not saying that the commander isn't probably morally unstraight. You know, he might be all messed up. And I know that there's cheating that goes on. And I understand all of that. But it's still not the standard they're held to. And that's something that I know out of my life. Sure, I saw plenty of people that were not morally straight, but don't think, as some suggest, that, oh, you know, they're just a bunch of heathens running. Sure, there's plenty of heathens running around there. There's plenty of heathens running around everywhere, sadly. But they are held to a standard, whether they meet that standard or not. I forsake not my country, my mission, my comrades, my sacred duty. You know, there is beauty left in this world. It has not all been removed. So not only do I want you to understand that you will never be disappointed serving God, this is not pie in the sky when I die. There is joy and happiness to be had right here. Not all of America believes it's okay for homosexuals to marry. I know that illegally the United States Supreme Court they have meant to, and I don't know what's going to happen from it, but they have meant to illegally impose on each state this ungodly circumstance. But more than half of the states in the United States, in this union, more than half voted to make homosexual marriage illegal. The Supreme Court said you can't do that. But what does that say? That means there's enough voters in more than half of the states in this country. Oregon! I mean, really? Oregon? I mean, they've either got web feet or web brain. One of the most liberal. California! I mean, the whole left coast voted against homosexual marriage. California? used to say the only thing that, in the Army, the drill sergeants used to always tell us, the only thing that comes from California are fruits and nuts. Which are you? Well, I guess the nuts vote against the fruits, because the majority of the voters in California voted. Now, am I saying that all these people are godly people? No. But they have enough moral sense to understand that that's not a marriage. This world is in trouble. And it's mostly the ungodliness of our leaders trying to impose their filth on the average person. Lost, probably. But there is still some moral sense. I know back in the 50s and the 60s and, you know, in most places even in the 70s, they shut down the bars at Saturday at midnight and didn't open them. Oh, they opened them up again. Be sure of that. We're talking about, but all Sunday, they used to call these blue laws, all Sunday long, they couldn't sell liquor. There was nobody out in his boxer shorts mowing the lawn at 10 o'clock on Sunday morning. They had more sense than that. I understand that. And you don't see that kind of respect like you used to. But all of the moral fiber of this nation has not been extinguished. Now, moral fiber is not going to get anybody to heaven. You know, I'd rather live next to the Osmond family than the Osborne family. I think Donny Osmond would probably make a better neighbor than Ozzy Osbourne. In fact, I know he would. Is he going to go to heaven for it? No. But I just want you to understand that we do not yet live in Sodom. I know there's some really bad places. And I know if you watch the television, our president and the Senate and, in fact, most of Washington, D.C. would like us to believe that we left Sodom behind a long time ago, but that is not the case yet. Sin is horrible and it is filthy and, I mean, you know, people have no sense and, you know, I understand, they used to be ashamed. They wouldn't go to a adult entertainment place, you know, you never saw cars parked in a parking lot like that. People were ashamed. They still go, I know, and they also didn't have them across the street from kindergartens. Now they just got them on the main street, but they used to have that kind of filth off in the side, you know, and down where nobody... Now, does that make it morally better? No, but it shows that people at least had some shame. They knew it was wrong, and they didn't care very much because it still prospered, but they cared enough to at least... have some shame. I know that that shame is quickly dwindling. I know. I get how bad it is. I live in Chicago. It is not a pleasant place. I love it there because God put me there, and I love the people, and I want them to know Christ, and I love my brothers and sisters. But it's just amazing to me. The filth and the wickedness. But you know what? There's still beauty in this world. There's still joy to be had in this world. There's still Christian fellowship. You can still enjoy God's creation. There are still institutions where morality, they're not going to go to heaven because of it. But the laws of God are still at least supposed to be governing people. It's not over yet. It's there's a lot of room for it to get worse, which is scary. But think of the other side of that. The other side of that is, that means there's still some good. Some joy, some morality, some decency. There, it still exists. It's not gone. It's gone if you watch the 7 o'clock news or 6 o'clock news. Absolutely. Walter Cronkite used to, sign off by wishing everyone the blessings of God. Now you got, all kinds of cretins and they're like cheerleaders for the worst of the leaders of this nation. And why these people are being elected, obviously it's warped, and people have no sense, and they're more worried about promises of financial benefit than morality. I understand all of that. But don't think it is all over. There is still, God is still in control. And there is still joy and decency in this world. Decency won't get someone to heaven. But you know what it shows? It shows, see, everyone that does wrong knows they're doing wrong. Don't ever let anybody tell you, don't listen to psychiatrists tell you that, well, he didn't know that it was wrong. Nonsense. God says they know. They just don't care. And even if they do care, it's not out of, if they're lost, it's not out of a sense of righteousness or godliness. They just, conscience. Conscience is not righteousness. It's just a knowledge that it's wrong and I'm better off doing right. And that still exists. I am not trying to lessen the evils that exist in this world. I'm not trying to minimize the filth and the evil and the sin in this nation. But I don't want you to be a sad sack. Now, most of you, probably, especially the younger ones, don't know what a sad sack is. They're mourning, and it's not, and everything's wrong. And look, God is still in control. There are still things to take joy in this life. And you know where you'll find it? It goes right back to where we began. In the will of God. You'll never be disappointed in your life. Now, will there be hardships? Will there be difficulties? Yes! But you will never be disappointed with what God does if you seek His will. Ever. Just try it. That's what I tell people. I tell myself this all the time. So it's not like I've got this under control. This is what I tell myself all the time. Self, I don't really, because I do talk to myself, because, I like intelligent conversations sometimes. So, I'll say, self, I know you don't want, you know what God wants, you know God's will, it's not that hard to figure out in the situation, but you really don't want it. It's not the way you've got this planned. And I know that it would be easy to take your eyes off of Christ and look at the world and be consumed with all the fears and everything and all the stuff of the world. And I know you don't really believe that God can't or won't, but you just don't want what God has for you to do. And you're determined that that's not going to make you happy. No, I want that stinking quarter. I don't want that dollar. And that's the way it is. I know all this is true. But why don't we just try this? Why don't we just give this God thing a shot? Because you know who God is. You know He loves you. You know he's right. You know if you disagree with him, you're wrong. Though you don't want to admit it. And you know that he can and he will bring perfect good into your life. And it is available to you if you just receive it. I mean, it's there. You know where you should live? You should live the place that God gives you to live, because he's already prepared safety and care and provision for you there. That's where you should work. I mean, that's where everything is good. Will God abandon you if you don't? No, even if you're not faithful, God will be faithful. But you can save yourself a lot of unhappiness. Now, this is a conversation I have with myself. This is what this is not for you, this is for me. This is what I try to tell myself. You know you'll be unhappy if you don't seek God's will. You know you'll be happy if you do seek God's will. So what's the matter with you? I don't know. What is the matter with me? Why do we do stupid things? Why do we always seek that which is not right? I don't know. We're crazy, every one of us. But there is good, there is joy, there is happiness in this life. We don't have to be miserable and angry and upset about everything all the time. We'll just seek the Lord's will. I don't like the sin. I'm against, and it's a problem. I get all of that. But there is no circumstance in this world that can rob me of the joy which God gives to me unless I am willing. Because all I have to do is seek the will of God. I can find decency. Peace. I get stressed out all the time. And I know I don't need to be stressed out. And I tell myself, now this is dumb. Just understand that God's in control. But no, I'm not done throwing a tantrum yet. I'm not done being mad at that knucklehead. I'm not ready to get right. It's my party and I'll cry if I want to. And we make ourselves miserable. I don't get why we do that, but we don't have to. Closing, I'll just repeat what I said when I began. There has never been anyone who has submitted to the will of God. No child of God has ever submitted to the will of God and been disappointed. We disappoint ourselves with our own foolishness all the time.